It's Tom Bazin, it's Kerry Mulligan, and it's Our Love, and they are here in front of me, along with Tim P as well. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi.
How are you? You all right?
Hello, very well, thanks.
Thank you for coming in and being on the programme. It's wonderful to see you all, have you all here. I'm so happy you're all here. This film, there are very few films that I would recommend to absolutely anybody and everybody that I see, and that is what I've been doing with this film. It's just so wonderful. Tim, I actually messaged you, didn't I, and said how much I liked it, and you said how surprised you were at the reaction it's got.
First one who said that. No. Well, surprised, yeah, it has been, really. I mean, I don't know. I've kind of like done various, you know, other ventures over the years, but I've never had anything approaching the reaction that we've had from this. And it's sort of weirdly still going on, where people just message out of the blue and just say, you know, nice things about it. So, yeah, you have to sort of go, I'm surprised by that.
And for you, Tom, as well, what have made of the success of it?
Oh, it's been lovely. And, you know, it's been, as Tim said, it's been sort of, you know, it's been sort of fits and starts. That's the funny thing about film compared to TV. You know, you feel like the audience kind of response kind of grows over time as people talk about it, and then, you know, the different releases, it sort of comes on streaming and stuff, and then suddenly more people see it, and it's just a lovely kind of ongoing thing. So it's been great.
I think the first thing I knew about it was Emma Freud sent a message and said, Richard Curtis loves this film, you have to come and see it. And I don't think I did go and see it at that point. But what was Richard Curtis's involvement in all of this?
I sent it to him.
Oh, is that what it is? This is Kerry.
Yeah, Emma wrote a really good friend. So I said, we watched this. I
think right.
It's really good.
And
blowing your own trumpet.
By the way, I'm in it a little bit. And you're my friends. I sent it to him. And then that was the reaction that,
sent me some pictures of Richard crying.
Oh, yeah,
from
Richard.
Emma
sent me. Emma was sitting documenting Richard watching the film, which is classic. And she's sending these screenshots of Rich, like, tearing up throughout the film. And then I sent that around. I was like, lads, we got Richard Curtis.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Okay. Now that all makes sense. So can you just tell us a little bit about the background of you two went to Cambridge together? Is that right, Tim and Tom?
More or less, yeah. I was actually living there. And
Tim's from Cambridge.
I'm from
and
Cambridge.
He pretended to be studying there.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right. So, yeah.
It's a long story.
You used to see him in the cafe then in the mornings. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, we did some sketch stuff together and started doing comedy, moved in together in London, and then wrote a short film in 2006, which was a kind of a, you know, prototype for this movie. Me and Tom just sort of on the island, I get him out through vicarious means to play for me in a more private gig than he was expecting. And yeah, we loved making the film and it did well. And then we decided to go back to it 16 years later and turn it into a feature.
Where did the idea originally come from, though? Was it you sitting over a coffee table and just going, well, what if this happens? Where was the scene?
He's got a decent anecdote.
I don't know if this is true, but this
it better
this
be good. Occurred,
yeah. It's not bad.
Okay. Lower expectations, everyone.
At the time, we were in a sketch group and we were coming up with a lot of two-hander ideas. And at the same time, we were doing live comedy. But we hadn't really done our own shows or anything by that point. So we all had like 10, 15 minutes each. And we were asked by Rick Edwards to go and put on a comedy show for this rich family he knew in Devon. And so it was me, Tim, Alex Horn, Joe Wilkinson and Rick did this kind of review, a sort of mixed bill, I guess, for this family. But it was just these six people after dinner. And so these sort of six very posh people. It was extremely excruciating. It was awful. And they'd say things like, oh, no, not, can you get the other chap back on? And they'd sort of like interact with us.
How
and they
rude.
Didn't. They didn't they were really, they were very entitled people, but they paid very well. And
good.
We got to go around in golf buggies. So it was quite a good night. And I think maybe something about that atmosphere stuck with us and made us think it would be quite a funny environment for a film.
Tim's character, your character, sorry. Tell us about Charles and the character. Who did you base him on? How did he come about?
Yeah, I don't know really. I mean, we were writing a lot of sketches and writing, I think, quite a lot of people who are a bit like Charles, but he's a kind of, I mean, he's pretty lovable, but he's bloody annoying. And I guess I don't know, we've talked about maybe he is like the sort of person who just comes round to your family home and he's sort of a mate of your dad's and he's dropping something off and then he just, don't know, just never really shuts up, just sort of wanders around the house going, ugh, bread bin, don't mind it.
Yeah, no, instantly I'm thinking of people in my life who come around at Christmas time. Yeah, I know.
Amazingly, he's that guy in feature film.
but there is a depth and there's a story to him, and
it is one of those ones where you do get people who come up to you afterwards and say, oh, my husband's exactly like that, and you go, well, you know, fair play.
You've got to live with him.
What's quite funny about Charles, I don't think we even realised until you watch the film back, is that he's the worst person to be on his own.
Like,
it's a terrible idea for him to be on his own.
Yeah,
because he has almost no interior, like everything is outward, there's no filter.
And that's why it's so painful to watch, I think. Yeah.
And then so in the film, there was like a constant discussion of, we need to make this guy thread the needle between him being annoying for Herb, Tom's character, but not annoying for the audience. We're going to leave the cinema now.
Yes.
So it's kind of getting those two things. And then after that, you know, that wouldn't really be enough for the feature. So then we wanted to like... In the short, there is more to him, but not that much more. And then in the feature, I think there's more, which kind of gets discovered through Nell's appearance in the film, in the sort of middle section, where you just kind of, she sees something more in him, and you realise that he's a fully formed, if kind of fallible, human being.
Yeah.
And, otherwise I don't think the film would be that interesting to watch, you know, that's what we tried to do anyway.
I think you did it very successfully. Choose your song to dance to then, what would that be?
Oh, mine's called You Me Dancing by Los Campesinos.
Me and Tim used to act, we had a dance routine that we learnt to Los Campesinos.
Which of course now I want to see. But
I don't know if we ever filmed it, but it was based on a YouTube video of these two girls in America dancing, wasn't it? And we copied it. We
had a double act, and our friend Fletch, we said we wanted to do some dancing. And Fletch, I think it was Fletch who found this video.
Yeah.
Fletch found a video that two fans of Los Campesinos had made, and somewhere in Korea, I think. And they're just on their driveway, just dancing, and they've created a whole, they've choreographed everything. And then in our show, we learn all of those moves and dance like that about halfway through our double act, and then said that people are now starting to do the dance, and then played them doing it as if...
Oh my God, what world are we in?
Yeah. And it's very difficult to learn, but so I've heard that song a lot and danced to it a lot and got muddled a lot. Yeah.
And music is obviously incredibly important. Have you been in bands? Have you performed before? I mean, Tom...
No, not really.
But you must be a music obsessive. How many songs did you write for this film?
About 20 or so.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I am a kind of music obsessive, I think, but I've never really taken the time to get good enough to sort of see myself as a kind of proper musician, really.
I convinced myself you were in an indie band at some point in my life.
Sure, I was an athlete.
You do look a bit like John. and Kerry, you enjoyed performing, I presume, as the duo together.
Yeah.
And your voices work so well together.
Yeah, I was very clear that I could serve as a backing track if need be.
If necessary.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, let's have another song. Tom, choose a song for us then. Your song to dance to.
Okay, so this is a song I danced to with my kids. It's quite cheesy, but it's Can't Hold Us by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
Oh, okay.
It's a good song. My kids absolutely love it, and it is very good to dance.
Okay, are the dance moves, particular dance moves?
It's just about the attitude.
How old are your kids?
8 and 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're rearing them on Macklemore? Or they brought him to you.
To be honest, I think anything that they're into, I generally encourage. There's a lot of K-pop Demon Hunters in my house
as well, really?
At the moment. Yeah.
I've never seen it. Is it good?
Yeah, it's really good. Annoyingly, it's fantastic.
Is it? Kerry, have you watched it?
I haven't seen it.
Okay. Have you not seen it? It's 100% the same
been
age?
Played in my house. Oh, I've chosen to not be in the room.
Wow, okay.
Yet.
Tim, have you seen
it? No, not seen that one, though.
Okay, fine. All right, so you're the expert. Yeah. What's the song again? It's Macklemore and...
Can't Hold Us. Macklemore and Ryan Lewis.
Can't Hold Us. It's Macklemore and Ryan Lewis and Can't Hold Us, and that was a choice of Tom. Okay, what's your job title? So we'll go from left to right. So your job title, Tim.
In life,
generally, what do you consider? If you think about yourself, how would you describe yourself?
Voiceover artist and writer.
Okay. Kerry? Voiceover artist.
How do you eat yours? Bit of writing, you know, acting, I suppose. Comedian is in there.
Yeah.
And poet.
Six. I think we're up to six.
I think six.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Greedy.
Okay. Kerry.
One thing. I can do one thing.
What can you do?
That's offensive.
Sometimes act.
Act very well.
On occasion.
And Tom?
Well, yeah, writer, actor, and comedian, sometimes musician, I suppose.
Okay. Yeah. What was your first job?
The first job I ever had?
Yeah.
Working in a nursery, but like as in a florist. Not as in
oh, like
kids.
A garden centre
like
nursery.
A garden centre, but yeah, so I was mixing the compost for my first job.
I bet you'd have enjoyed Johnny that. London's you like your gardening?
I did like it, actually. £2 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's...
Yeah, I know.
What did you spend that on? Not much.
I think I saved it up. Weirdly, I remember buying my brother a telly.
What? A telly?
Yeah, I bought my brother a telly.
Didn't you have a number one?
Oh, yeah, had a Christmas number one.
Which one? What?
Well, you tell me which one. 1994.
Oh,
I think.
God. 94. Oh, I don't know.
My school.
It's kind of grunge was quite big around then.
The other
St. Winifred's school, quite no.
The lads from my school sang on this Christmas single.
Oh,
and this particular artist has not gone on to have a huge pop career.
Okay.
I'd say this was the peak.
Okay, you're going to have to tell
really
me.
Really building it up.
Yeah, cult following.
Cult following. I mean, the artist is kind of still around.
Oh, yeah. Man, say it.
He's a big...
You know
he's you've told me this story before. So
he's a big
back
fella.
Of my mind somewhere.
He's a big fella. He was the king of Saturday Night TV for a while.
Okay. I just can't think back to 1994.
Okay. His catchphrase is his name said three times.
Tell me. I'm so bad.
It's Mr. Blobby.
Mr. Blobby? Yeah. No way! Yeah. How was I ever going to get
enough,
that?
Yeah. I had totally forgotten who it was.
Yeah. No, I sang on Mr. Blobby.
Oh my gosh.
Christmas number one.
I remember going to Television Centre to meet Mr. Blobby. Now that you've said that, you were probably there.
No, they didn't incorporate us in any of the Blobby campaign. If
no
you work with Blobby, you get a bit burnt. It is all about him.
Really? Okay.
I don't remember lying, Blobby.
At least you're in his orbit.
Yeah, I'm in his orbit, yeah. I'm another Blobby casualty.
Childhood song, Kerry, we'll go for yours, so...
I just watched the Take That documentary. Have you seen it?
Oh, my God. Yes, I have. It's better than I thought it was going to be.
I thought it was so good.
Yeah.
Never Forget.
Never Forget.
It's packed. Childhood? How old were you when that came out?
Like 10 or 9.
Oh, it's going to be depressing for you, Tom. Yeah. I know, I hate it when people do that. Yeah.
I was 34.
All right, Take That. It's Never Forget from Take That, and that was a choice of Kerry Mulligan. There you go. What, you went and saw them, I presume, live?
I actually never saw them live. I saw Backstreet Boys live, and I saw Westlife live. So, I never saw Take
That. So big
that
pop.
Live. Take That
kid.
Broke up before. I mean, they weren't really together very long. That's.
I don't know how long their career was,
wasn't
actually.
That,
no, it was fleeting.
It was fleeting.
Yeah.
Beatles.
Yeah. Kerry, where are we? Yeah, were your first job?
Oh, I was a cleaner.
Were you?
Oh. Yeah.
Didn't you work up the creek as well? No, not up the creek. What's it called? Ealing Live.
I worked at Ealing Live, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a couple of different jobs. I was a barmaid, a cleaner, and I was a runner at Ealing Live, yeah.
What's Ealing Live? Is it studio?
It's a comedy
show. Okay.
Film comedians doing their little sets every Thursday night.
Oh, cool. I used to wish I was in it.
Yeah, you were in Ealing Live?
I used to wish I was in it. Yeah, we were on the outside looking in, me and Tom.
Yeah. So it was a very cool place?
It was very cool, yeah.
Okay. How did you get the job?
I wrote to Ealing Studios and just asked for a job as a runner.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you knew what you wanted to do?
I wanted to be an actor, but I had no route in, and I had not got into drama school and was sort of in a gap year. So I was doing lots of jobs to make money, and then
when did you do Pride and Prejudice? You were very young then, weren't you?
It was the end of my gap year. I was 18,
wow,
yeah.
Okay.
Gosh.
I did it May we started, or right. Whenever, the end of the year. But that year was when I was working at Ealing. Yeah.
So you were hustling to get into the business in a way?
Yeah,
I
saw Al Pacino get out of a car one day, and I thought, well, this is probably it. But how can I make this?
Wow. Did you talk to him?
No. Okay. I talked to Charlie Cox in the hallway, and I was like, he's an actor. This is so exciting. but then I ended up auditioning for Pride and Prejudice and got that. I had no idea. I was just trying to be near people who were doing it and see if I could somehow just sort of...
We should have another song now. Who are we? Who's done their childhood song? Who's next?
Do you want mine?
Yeah, go on, Tom.
Nick Kershaw, The Riddle. I was a member of the Nick Kershaw fan club when I was
a
child.
I've definitely never played this, okay.
You're kidding?
No.
Oh my God, I was a big Kershaw head,
okay.
If that's the phrase.
You fan club, did you say?
Yeah, I was in the fan club, had a scrapbook. I loved the guy when I was a kid.
He's very nice, I think. I'm sure.
He is.
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah. Should we play it?
Of course we'll play
it. Okay, we'll play it. Nick Kershaw and The Riddle. Thank you for that, Tom. What was your childhood like? Where did it take you back to? What was going on?
Oh, this was very much, you know, Cheam,
You're a Cheam boy.
Yeah, so in fact, same address as Tony Hancock. We were East Cheam, Railway Cuttings. That's where basically where I grew up. And just, yeah, me and my brother, bunk beds, listening to Nick Kershaw. Great childhood.
What duvet covers did you have?
I was Mr. Men, so I did have something cool.
You're Mr. Men. Yeah.
Oh, that's
cool. Mr. Men?
No, the gang. And then Mr. Men curtains. I think my mum was sort of, you know, busy. She was buying the material.
I had the Little Mermaid. I just remember. Yeah.
There you
still
go.
Have the Little Mermaid.
And then she made a lampshade as well out of Mr. Men.
That was very much a thing. It was the matching curtains.
When I was a big boy, we got rid of them all.
Okay, what age are we saying?
Nine, ten? Yeah, around about that. And then about 25 years later, I went to a charity shop and found the lampshade that we'd thrown out.
The actual one?
Yes.
Did you buy it?
Yeah, because no one else is making that lampshade, and it was in my village.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. And did you buy it back?
Well, yeah, because I was working by then. It was only 50p.
Has that been in the charity shop for like 15 years?
So?
Has it been in that charity shop?
No one had bought it.
It was on the light.
God, what was your job, your first job?
Oh, Tim? Separating cans, steel and aluminium. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Where was this? Where did you grow up?
What's it called? A distributing machine. What are they called? Vending machine.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so I had to...
Do you have a magnet?
I had a magnet, and I was with my magnet separating steel cans from aluminium cans for recycling in a hotel next to a flyover.
Right. Yeah,
but so I wasn't as close to getting into the industry.
No. Oh my God, and what did you spend your money on? What would you have spent
it on? I did actually get a paper round and I did save up, you know, I remember like really scrimping and saving these £5 notes from doing my paper round, and I also bought a telly.
Did you?
Yeah, but for myself.
There you go.
Yeah, very wise. Right. And what's the coolest thing in your home? Is there something that, like a place, a desk or a memento you've got, or a picture or something that's very precious, something someone might have given you? And Jack White from the White Stripes has a bowling alley at his home.
Oh, wow.
Roger Taylor from Queen. No, leave that out. Roger Taylor from Queen's got a life-size statue of Freddie Mercury that he got from the Dominion. He had got that one that was outside in his garden. Anything that compares
I'll tell
with
you
that?
What I really like and really makes me happy every time I see it is I've got a flyer from Edinburgh Festival when Tim and I did a gig together, and part of our double act was that he's just really mean to me, and it's sort of meant to be funny, and someone wrote on this flyer saying, you need to get away from that horrible poet, he's really mean to you and really talentless, and I framed that. In fact, you might have framed it for me.
I think I probably did, actually.
What I was looking for. That's
makes
good.
Me really
that's
happy cool. whenever I see that.
Yeah,
you
know,
is there it's true as well.
Yeah. Tim?
I've got an anvil.
Anvil?
No, not an anvil, the other one. Like a piston. What? When I was doing comedy. I still do comedy actually, but I did a show in 2009 and it was maybe my favourite show. And we went to Deptford Market and bought a load of like scrap from the market, and I had that on my stage, and then at the end of the show, I did, you know, the floor is lava. I'd kind of walk down through the audience and then clamber over this stuff. It was like the end of the show, the finale. And I kept all of it, and it's almost all in this kind of metal trunk somewhere.
Oh, wow.
But there's this, it would have cost me like £3, and it's like a really heavy, really impractical piston. But it does make me happy because it's like a year of my life where I was kind of like clambering across it.
Yeah, excellent. And Kerry, can you compare with either of those memories? Is
I should
there anything
be able to compare with mine.
I just like how piston was like almost required no explanation.
It's yeah,
both piston.
Piston. I don't know. Have I got an no? Oh, I've got.
It doesn't matter. We can ask you. I can ask you something else.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Best award that you've ever won.
Mine's the Perrier Award 2009, the Anvil Show.
Anvil Show.
What Piston, yeah.
And that was really significant, obviously, for you.
Yeah, it was a big moment because, I'd never won anything before. And, I'd kind of watched comedy and done comedy for a while. And it is a mad award where people talk about it in the bars of Edinburgh, and you really shouldn't. And, you know, the cool people will go, it's not about the awards. But it sort of was.
Obviously.
Yeah, and then I remember winning it, and it's kind of... I'm not cool about it.
No.
I sort of go, I'm really glad I'm on the list of people who won it. Yeah.
And Kerry?
I didn't win anything ever at school when I was growing up. And then one year I got the prize for Endeavour.
Yes.
Oh, tries hard.
I just love that.
Yeah.
And I always tell my kids
there
that.
There should be an Academy Award for Endeavour.
For Endeavour.
There really should. There really should.
Yeah. Oh, my one thing that I did keep that is slightly linked to the Academy Awards is that I went to the COVID Academy Awards where everyone had to wear a mask and we were all at little cocktail tables and we were there for Promising Young Woman and I didn't win, but at the table they had these little like lampshades that had like Oscars, you know, sewn onto them, like little sort of chintzy lampshades. And at the end of the ceremony, Marcus was like, put it under your skirt. I was like, what? He was like, you're having that. You're going to have that.
Oh.
You went to the Oscars and it was really cool. You should have it. And I was like, babe, that's so embarrassing. He was like, you're wearing a massive dress. Put it under your skirt. So I put it under my...
caught, though, on the way out.
I don't, nobody was looking.
So you've got
COVID.
It?
I got it, yeah.
Well, there you go. That's your coolest
feature. That's my cool
feature.
Thing. Yeah. And I took it through cool. security. And you know how people like famously get their Oscar out in security and put it... I got out my lampshade and put it through the thing. I was like, there you go, lads. That's
my... And Tom, award?
I've got an award that says Tom Uno Champ.
Oh, yeah. Really?
From when I was a kid, which I actually turned into an episode of Here We Go, but my mum went and made an award for me.
Oh!
And gave me an award for being good at Uno.
Being so good at Uno. Yeah. You still good at Uno?
Very good, actually. I've had a sort of second wind
right.
with my son. Well, yeah, Uno.
It's going to come around. It's going to be with you for a long time.
Yeah. So, yeah, now he's like, wow, you've played a lot of Uno.
You're like, I've got an award for it, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
You're nominated for 3 BAFTAs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so exciting night, big night.
Oh yeah!
How do you feel about
impressive.
It?
I mean, we're giddy. We're like, you know, this is... We haven't been to one of these things since we were nominated for our short film back in 2008, so it's huge.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
I can't wait. We've got unfinished business. It's kind of weird being nominated for the best short film, because if you don't win it, then you're just a sort of best short film person, just sort of looking at Sylvester Stallone. Because we're a bit older, you could
we might end up being, I think we didn't win best adapted screenplay looking at something, but you've got half
there'll be people that we've sort of met along the way, yeah. So you do feel like less of a plonker.
Also, the short film category is like right at the front, isn't it? It's like sort of before the show proper begins.
Oh, so there's a bit longer where you can think, oh, we might have won something.
So you're up for, it's best adapted screenplay, outstanding British film, and then best actress in a supporting role. That's what you're going for.
Yeah.
What are you up against? What's the
who cares? I imagine Hamnet is probably the favourite, isn't it, for
in all of them, yeah,
British
probably.
Film.
What's who are you up against, Kerry?
Look, great people.
It's about the nominations, right? And it's about being there and having an amazing time.
No, it's about winning. If anyone's listening to this and can vote, it's about winning.
Oh, wow.
Vote for us.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's a decent angle.
Again, enjoy the night. Have an amazing time. Let's end on... Tim, did we have your childhood song?
I'm
losing track. So tell us, share with us what that is.
Is it called Do You Want to Know a Secret by the Beatles?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'd like to have that one because it reminds me of, you know, I just when my dad used to make beer and he'd sort of put, you know, 60s songs on.
Aww.
And I just sort of hear it drifting up vaguely. And it also reminds me of them having, you know, parties. And have, I mean, I guess they must have been in their like 40s at that point, sort of.
But really fun parties.
Yeah, really fun parties. You know, Mick Tyler
with
dressing up as a hippie. What?
With his beer.
What was
it? Yeah, with his beer. Yeah, yeah, fancy dress parties and things like that.
Oh wow!
But for some reason, I always remember that track, and I love the Beatles, and I kind of almost don't associate that with the Beatles now. I wouldn't know which album it's on or anything like that.
But so you associate it with your childhood.
It's sort of somewhere else. That one, yeah. But I love it.
Thank you to the delectable Kerry Mulligan, the delectable Tim Key and the delectable Tom Basden for spending some time with us chatting all things up close and personal about the brilliant film, The Ballad of Wallace Island.